Case number 23-1042 et al. Husky Marketing and Supply Company, Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and United States of America. Mr. Wagner for the petitioner, Mr. Ettinger for the respondents, Ms. Kohlhausen for the intervener.
Good morning.
Good morning. And may it please the court. FERC. FERC set the Ozark application for hearing to give Ozark an opportunity to demonstrate that it lacks the ability to exercise market power in an appropriately defined destination market. The ALJ assembled a substantial record and conducted a lengthy hearing. FERC's expert trial staff analyzed the options available to Ozark's shippers. It considered a competitive price for transportation to Wood River, the delivered prices of crude oil by various transportation routes, the identity of the shippers and where they consume crude oil, and the fact that Ozark's largest shipper by volume is its affiliate, and concluded that if Ozark attempted to exercise market power, its shippers would not shift their volumes to a location other than Wood River, and therefore that the destination market should be limited to the pipeline's terminus at Wood River. The ALJ agreed that Ozark had failed to meet its burden to establish a broader destination market than Wood River. It found that Ozark had the ability to exercise market power in that Wood River destination market, and it recommended she recommended that FERC deny the application. FERC then put that evidence to the side, did a 180-degree turn, and said that no quantitative analysis is needed to identify the destination market in which Ozark faces competition. Found that Ozark's burden of proof was satisfied by the observation that some of Ozark's volumes flow downstream to Patoka and beyond. And on that basis, FERC determined that Patoka must also be part of the destination market, and that every pipeline delivering to Patoka is necessarily a good competitive alternative to Ozark. And FERC ultimately found that Ozark does not have the ability to exercise market power over deliveries to the combined Wood River-Patoka market and granted the application. FERC precedent provides that when geographic markets are contested, the pipeline must justify its markets and competitive alternatives based on detailed cost analyses. By detailed cost analyses, FERC is referring to the costs of the pipeline's shippers. For example, in the TE Products case where that...
Since TE Products, the commission has said on numerous occasions that other methodologies can be used.
Well, it's said that other methodologies than a hypothetical monopolist test may be used, but as far as whether a detailed cost analysis is required, I don't believe FERC has cited a single case, a contested case, in which they had found until now that such an analysis was not needed. The commission cites several cases.
Does that make it wrong?
I'm sorry?
Does that make it wrong? This is the first time, as long as their analysis reasonably captures the relevant economic consideration. And I'm sure you disagree with some of that. But if it does, then what would be wrong? And it follows a pattern of decision making they have done in other cases, not contested ones. What would be arbitrary or capricious about them doing this thing here when you have, a clear track record of what the business is like between at Wood River and Patoka, and between Wood River and Patoka, and they made the sort of factual findings.
Sure. Well, two things. First of all, just about the prior cases, FERC has said that it does not scrutinize uncontested applications. So any principles that it might establish in one of those cases or evidence that it accepts in one of those cases doesn't establish principles for contested cases.
That's the one case to which you referred a moment ago.
TE Products?
No. You said there's been one since then. That when I mentioned the FERC has said several times numerous different methodologies would be acceptable. I think you said those were in uncontested cases, save one.
I think I must have misspoken then. I don't have a case in mind.
All right. Well, let me ask you to clarify for us, please. Assuming for the moment anyway that FERC is correct with regard to the geographic market determination, are you separately challenging FERC's determination that Ozark does not have market power within that expanded market?
No, if the destination market includes Wood River and Patoka, the HHI does indicate indicate that. But to go back to Judge Millett's question, I think that the relevant commercial realities, which all parties agree that commercial realities are relevant, we don't agree on what those are. Any consideration of commercial realities must include the delivered price. This court has recognized in the Mobil decision that delivered price is the real economic concern of shippers. One of the essential questions a shipper would ask when considering an alternative is how much will it cost? And without doing that, I just don't believe that there's a complete set of relevant commercial realities being examined.
Given first finding that most of the oil that goes into Wood River continues on to Patoka, you don't dispute that fact?
We don't dispute that fact, but there's a very important context. There's very important context to that fact.
Okay, but why doesn't that, given that most travels between the two of them, why isn't that a particularly salient fact in defining the relevant destination market as including both Wood River and Patoka? It would be rather artificial to treat it as just Wood River if most is just passing through.
Most of it does go through. However, most of what goes through for the pipeline's affiliate. And the pipeline and its affiliate have aligned interests. They've put that in their SEC filing.
That seems to go to the competitiveness issue that you are not contesting, you just told Judge Ginsburg. But as to the destination market, as to options that customers have, I'm not sure what the affiliation has to do with on that question. I understand its relevance at the competitiveness analysis.
Okay. It has to do with the rationality of using Patoka to escape an exercise of market power. If we're not looking at the entire set of the volumes that go through to Patoka as the relevant shippers that may react to an exercise of market power, the only shippers that continue through to Patoka that may or may not react to an exercise of market power, those that are not affiliated with the pipeline.
So you're saying the affiliate would continue to pay a super competitive price because, I think you say in your brief, because its profitability is upstreamed to the partnership.
Right? That's correct.
But the partnership, as far as we know, as far as I could tell, has an affiliate as the general partner, but there are limited partners, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Are they affiliates?
No.
So the general partner has a fiduciary duty to the limited partners not to overpay for a self-serving reason.
Yes, however, they have disclosed to those investors, to those non-affiliated investors, that our interests are aligned. And one arm of this combined enterprise is not going to act against an interest of another arm of the enterprise.
Where did you say they have disclosed?
MPLX, the owner of the pipeline.
Has said their interests are aligned. Use that word, aligned.
Yes, their interests are aligned with those of the shipper who is the largest shipper by volume on the pipeline.
That doesn't excuse them from, or does it, from their duty to the general partners, to the limited partners.
I think you also have to factor in the fact that there is a long-term contract here. That's
a completely different point, correct?
I don't believe so. I think that affects the motivations of the shipper. It has a contractual commitment to its affiliate to continue shipping on this pipeline.
With regard to price?
That's correct. Or else it will pay a deficiency fee in order to switch. So not only do they have aligned interests because of their common ownership, which I recognize is not complete, but they also have a financial tie that has cemented that through that contractual commitment with the deficiency fee. I think this actually, the commission.
How does that go? How does that go to the question of what the proper destination market is? Just to look at the reality of how this product is moving and the numerous other pipelines that come in to Patoka, again, it sounds to me like you're making an argument that FERC should have found a lack of sufficient competitiveness in the Wood River Pawtucket market, as opposed to that's not sort of geographically the appropriate destination market.
One of the issues here is that, and I recognize the different steps. You know, there's the step in defining the market and the step in defining the competitors. FERC has basically eliminated the step of defining the competitors because it's found that the use of any alternative, regardless of availability, regardless of price, is going to, it shows that is a good competitive alternative under circumstances of market power. And I don't think you can make that leap from current use to what would happen if the pipeline attempted to exercise market power. That's the cellophane fallacy, that prices in a market are assumed to be competitive, and the choices that customers in that market make are assumed to reflect that competition. I think if you only look at a map and you only look at the shipment patterns under current conditions, that doesn't tell FERC what would happen, what would be rational in the exercise of market power. Briefly, there are the three groups of shippers. I think we could set aside the people that stop at Wood River, and we've got the affiliate, which is the lion's share of the capacity. It's not rational for them to shift. So Ozark is not going to lose volumes to someone delivering to Patoka.
Well, FERC said there's a significant minority that aren't so bound, and by significant, signify that they would care that if they were all to go packing and head to another pipeline, that would have a huge economic impact on MPLX.
I don't think that FERC can make that assumption without looking at actual detailed costs. What it's saying is, and I can't say the number because it's under seal, but I would disagree that it's a substantial amount. Those shippers.
But so is that, I mean, because FERC did undertake a competitiveness analysis and it did address the affiliate status and that those implications. You may disagree with those determinations, but again, you focus solely here on what the destination market should be. And that seems to me a narrower question than the role of affiliates in affecting or not the competitiveness of the Pawtucket River.
The destination market analysis is the only place to contest who is a competitor to this pipeline. And what we're supposed to be doing here is to find out, is it rational for shippers to move, and would it be effective for shippers to move? The vast majority of the volumes on this pipeline are not going to move. So what you've got is a testable proposition. Would this percentage, however we characterize it,
argue to FERC that even as to the affiliates, they would not move?
That's correct.
And what did FERC say?
FERC said most of the volumes go to Patoka. They're 70 miles apart, and they're both near St. Louis. That's all they said.
It did talk about the affiliates, and it did not fit. One, a lot of that goes to competitiveness, but it felt like that there were checks there.
I don't believe that it said that there were checks there. It just said that they would not.
They would not have the checks. I'm mischaracterizing, but would not have the capacity to cause this, to interfere with their ability. The affiliate status was not going to preclude them from affecting why this should be the destination. So again, it might have some impact over a competitiveness issue, but for purposes of having consumer choices, it rejected the notion the affiliate status was going to prevent that from happening. And in any event, the significant minority would have sufficient weight. That's a factual determination you can dispute, but I'm not sure what we're supposed to do with that.
There's no substantial evidence for that. It's an assumption. It's just a statement that most of the volumes go this way, so that's part of the market. And what we've said is, but you have to look at, will these people move? Will they provide incremental price discipline if the pipeline attempts to exercise market power? And the answer to that, I believe is no, but I also don't have the burden of proof. Ozark needed to show someone is going to shift these volumes to Patoka, and it's going to hurt this pipeline. It's going to stop it from exercising market power. And the immediate our immediate response was, well, your affiliate won't do that. And that's, as I said, it's a quantitative issue. It's a testable issue, and they didn't do it. There's no substantial evidence to support that this pipeline would suffer if it raised rates on its affiliate. And there's no substantial evidence that shows that this pipeline would lose any volumes if it raised rates on the small, you know, the group of small shippers that continue to Patoka and aren't affiliated. That's the crux of the case. That's what's missing substantial evidence. It's just an assertion. They could go over there. That's just a map. That's not.
Can I ask you this?
Yes.
Repeatedly, the commission says we looked at the market realities. And the record contains some confidential business information that I presume is the market, part of the market realities. And just assuming that that there's a significant flow of crude in both directions between Patoka and Wood River, why is that? Just, I think you tried to explain or explain this once. I ask you to try again. Why is that not indicative of the being in one market?
The back and forth flow. Sure. For one thing, the flow from Patoka to Wood River is actually quite small. If you look, it's actually quite small. It's, I believe, I don't know that I can say the number. It's a single digit percentage of the refinery's capacity at Wood River. If Wood River itself is the destination market, that pipeline, that Capwood pipeline that comes from Patoka to Wood River would be one of the competitive alternatives. But what FERC has done is not only is Capwood that comes in from Patoka a competitive alternative, but everything upstream of it is too. And that doesn't make any more sense than going to the source of any of the other pipelines that lead in to Wood River or to Patoka. Well, we have Canada.
So the upstream of Capwood were large capacities coming in from two or three other pipelines. And so a shipper could, I think their part of the shipper could route the throughput into Patoka through those carriers. Is that correct?
That's the assertion, yes.
And you're saying that's not significant because they can't get to Wood, because there isn't enough capacity to take them to Wood River?
I'm saying there is some capacity there. It's not very significant. And the way that should be treated is to treat the Capwood pipeline from Patoka to Wood River as a competitive alternative, not to look upstream of it any more than you look upstream of the other competitive alternatives. We don't.
Well, as you were suggesting, it's a bottleneck on the way to Wood River.
That's one way of putting it, yes.
And I don't remember, did the commission take account of the possibility of shipping beyond Patoka, not to Wood River?
Yes, I think so. In a narrative sense, they took account of that. They described it. They didn't do any quantitative analysis. But yes, those small shippers that continue on to Patoka, as far as I'm aware, no one stops at Patoka. You continue on to Ohio and Illinois and other refineries in that direction.
Right. So they could get to Patoka and then beyond, assuming there's capacity on those other carriers.
And that is one of the assumptions that FERC made, assuming there's capacity. That's right.
And am I correct in recalling that in a market that doesn't have a high HHI, they don't get to the question of capacity?
There are a couple different ways to look at capacity. Yeah, they don't look at, you can look at capacity as a sort of secondary factor if it's a close case, but you should also look at availability.
But that implies that they don't look at it then if it's not a close case. Right?
But they're supposed to, because a competitive alternative is one which is readily available.
So you're saying they should be dealing with it twice?
They should consider whether there is available capacity in order to name something, to designate something as an alternative or a location as part of the market. And then if at the end of that, you do an HHI and it comes out to the knife's edge at $24.99, then you can look at it and FERC can make some sort of qualitative judgments and say, okay, this falls on this side of the line or that side of the line. It's relevant to both inquiries. You're not a competitor unless you're readily available. And that sort of fact can be taken into account in the end as sort of a tiebreaker.
So you're saying they look to, they say they're looking to where a shipper could turn and ignoring that there may not be sufficient capacity to turn there.
Not just ignoring, but the pipeline had the burden of proof to show that and for let them off without doing so.
We do have some data in the record about excess capacity. I don't remember. Is this confidential?
Most likely it is. I would say, however, that there's plenty of data in the record, but there's no data in the decision.
Well, I think what happened there, it looks pretty likely that the FERC was omitting references to or trying to work around a lot of confidential business information by saying repeatedly, we've looked at the market realities, i.e. what's moving around where, some of which is now before us in the green brief. It's in the record. And the FERC says that's what we looked at. I don't know why we would doubt it.
I think if they'd done that, there would be at least a citation to an exhibit or something in the record. I can understand that maybe we don't want to litter the brief or litter the decision with confidential markings and redactions and so on, but they should at least say, we looked at this here, and we all know what that means. They didn't say that. All they said was, it's enough to know that some people, or that the majority, including the affiliate, continue to Patoka. It's about 70 miles apart, and they're both near St. Louis. That's the justification for the decision. There may be plenty of evidence.
It's not just the affiliate. I mean, one of your clients, all of their oil moves.
That's right. All of it. Yes. And I would point to.
This isn't just an affiliate movement.
That's right. And my client is an extremely small shipper on this pipeline.
I'm just saying, one of them moves all of their oil onto Patoka.
That's right.
As does this affiliate.
It's not about all of our oil. It's about how much business is the pipeline going to lose?
So how much, give a rough percentage if you can, is carried
low
by,
single digits.
Shipped by the non-affiliate that is your client?
Pardon me, low single digits. And I have it in the record.
What are you measuring with the low single digits?
The capacity, the used capacity on the Ozark pipeline.
From Oklahoma to Patoka? Or are you talking just from Wood River to Patoka?
I'm talking, that's a different pipeline. I'm talking from Cushing, Oklahoma to Wood River, which is the Ozark pipeline, one on, one off.
Okay, between Wood River and Patoka?
I don't have that data. I'm sorry. I do have the data in the record. There it is. Joint Appendix 1278, lines 12 to 16, that discusses Husky's share of the Ozark capacity. Mm-hmm.
What was the reference?
Yes, Joint Appendix 1278. It should be in the sealed appendix.
Sorry, and this is from on which segment?
This is the Ozark segment. So this is Oklahoma to Wood River.
Right, but I'm not quite sure.
It's a reference.
But we're trying to figure out whether the market includes not just Wood River. I need to know the percentage between, since all of that moves on, how much of, not all of the affiliate stuff moves on, how its percentile is between Wood River and Patoka?
I don't,
and,
but I...
And all your clients, all not, I should not just your client, but all non-affiliate shippers.
Mm-hmm. I have that number in the brief as well. That one is, wish I could say the number.
That's okay.
Well, could you tell us
point is to it.
When your rebuttal's on?
Yeah, it's in my brief. Let me find the number.
Do it on rebuttal if you wish.
And I'd be happy to. Why don't I not take the time and I'll state that on rebuttal. Well, the last thing I would just say about, pardon,
You just sum up then, and we'll give you some time on rebuttal.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the last thing I would say about Husky's volumes, all of Husky's volumes. I mean, that's like saying a grocery store doesn't have market power over its customers because the Jones family shops buys all their groceries there. It's a matter of what is the share of the pipeline's capacity? What's it going to lose? What does it put at risk by raising its prices to a super competitive level? And what it puts at risk is very little. It puts at risk that small percentage of people that aren't affiliated with it that are going to go through.
This all sounds again like a competition argument, not a destination market.
I understand that, and that the destination market.
FERC said, I mean, it did talk actually with some specificity in paragraph 27 of the initial decision about the constraints it thought on would exist. It found would exist on MPXL's ability to unfairly raise or exercise market power and increasing rates. So it did address that issue. Before that, it said, we haven't before considered affiliation as part of identifying the destination market. Customers as customers, I guess is what they're saying there. And then we'll deal with affiliation and the competitiveness prong. And I don't understand your briefs to be saying that was an error of law by FERC. You have lots of arguments about the substantiality of evidence supporting their ultimate determination of the destination market, but you haven't argued as a matter of law that FERC was wrong to say we haven't in the past considered affiliation just at this question of what the destination market is.
Sure, and it's ruled on a small handful contested market-based rate cases. It's not surprising that any particular set of
facts. You're not saying they erred in saying.
No, I'm not saying. No, there's
we're
not
putting affiliation in the competition bucket, right. Not in the destination bucket. You agree that's not an error of law by FERC, or you're not contesting that.
I'm not contesting that. What I'm contesting is that in order to have substantial evidence for their destination market, they needed to account for it. Okay. All right, I'm well over my time. I appreciate it.
We'll give you some time on rebuttal. Thank you so much. Maybe you'll have that information for Judge Ginsburg.
May it please the court, I'm Scott Ettinger for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Thank you for hearing this case this morning. I want to go directly to the discussion, Judge Millett, on some of the affiliate issues and some of the paragraphs that the court was referring to, and in particular, the initial decision, paragraphs 25 through 27, where the commission, in fact, addressed affiliate issues when it comes to determining the geographic destination market. The commission's basic analysis is in the earlier paragraphs of the order, 18 to 22, where it relied heavily on the market behavior. And we can talk about that. But what I want to focus on now is what paragraphs 25 through 27 are doing. This is where the commission took a very careful look at the assertions by petitioners here, Husky and Phillips 66, that the affiliate would prevent acting as a discipline on a potential exercise of market power by MPLX Ozark.
What is the JA reference in that?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm looking at paragraphs 25 that starts at JA 779. And in particular, the following paragraph that starts at JA 780. What I want to highlight is the footnote to the first of those two paragraphs, and that's footnote 61, JA 780. Here, the commission is citing to the rebuttal testimony of witness Dr. Webb, and using what he labeled as a conservative elasticity, determined that the non-affiliates would cause losses if there was an exercise of market power here. And I can point to the, there's a specific number, and I want to be careful not to discuss sealed material, but his exhibit that he was referring to is at JA 1391.
Is there a footnote to that effect?
The footnote I'm referring to is in the commission order, paragraph 25, note 61. This is the reference to Dr. Webb. And this is in support of the commission's determination that the significant minority of non-affiliate shippers would help to discipline an exercise of market power. And I just want to point out two things about what Dr. Webb says at the commission is referring to right there. He's making two so I already mentioned the conservative elasticity. He also assumes in that analysis that Phillips 66 has no response, no discipline at whatsoever. And he also assumes that the affiliate shippers have no discipline whatsoever. And that's an interesting point, because if we look at the next footnote, the commission cites a cross-examination of Dr. Norman, where Dr. Norman says that, well, it's not that there would be no, it's not that the affiliate shipper would have no incentive, the affiliate shipper would have a reduced incentive.
It just seems to me like these two paragraphs and the footnotes you're talking about are FERC saying why trial staff was wrong. Okay, but to have substantial evidence, they have to show what's right.
Correct.
They can't just say you're wrong.
I agree.
So where do they have substantial evidence that there's not going to be this affiliate problem, that there really will be customers with a choice in the Pawtucket market, which is their argument that it's they're really an apparition given their affiliate status, that there's going to be any real choices made. And the analysis that I see in 27 is really more about the switch from, it reads to me at least, from MPLX line, I think I've been saying that wrong, but the MPLX line to the Woodpat pipeline, changing between the two lines and charges there, which seems to be potentially different from the ability, the price is actually charged then to everybody who's going to travel down these lines, and in particular, over the long term, to be able to essentially make the affiliates not relevant customers for purposes of this destination market, Pawtucket.
I think so now backing up into the commission's primary analysis. So these are paragraphs 18 through 22. And what the commission there was saying that there are alternatives. So the alternatives available are the ones that are available in Pawtucket. So we don't have to assume.
But they're not talking about the affiliates, right? I mean, you were right. They didn't talk about affiliates, at least as I have it, until paragraph 25.
That's correct.
Okay, so but before that, they're saying there's customers. There are other pipelines in Pawtucket, but we don't know that there's a sufficient number of customers there from the Wood River to Pawtucket link that the people are going all the way through that are going to be able to actually exercise any kind of meaningful check on Ozark / Woodpat's ability to increase prices, exercise market power in a way that would really make this not a matter of customer choice. I mean, I think that's what they're saying when they blend the competition in, is that there really isn't going to be realistically customer choice in Pawtucket in the way that FERC found it. And so where is your evidence that customer choice will be there by a majority of shippers?
I guess I would say two things. First of all, I would refer back to the footnote that's referring to Dr. Webb's rebuttal testimony. I think he is saying that the non-affiliates alone are sufficient to discipline this market, and the commission cites that in the footnote. But backing up,
how can a minority have enough control?
There's
not a lot of options between Wood River and Pawtucket. There's lots of options in Pawtucket. There's not a lot between Wood River and Pawtucket.
But they don't have to go to Wood River. These shippers can't. The problem here is that available options are being ignored by the analysis suggested by my friends on the other side. That's Dakota Access, Southern Access, and the Mustang. They don't go to Wood River.
Maybe I'm wrong, correct me. I thought there was evidence in the record that those pipelines were either at or very close to capacity already.
Those are, that's not a, I don't believe that's an issue. And I'd go back to
wait,
the.
Is that a factually accurate description of the record or not?
I am not sure. I would refer, Your Honor, to the initial.
Okay, assume, and then we can verify the record citation. Maybe they'll have it, or you can provide it later. But if they are at or near capacity, then they're not a real choice, are they? Or tell me how FERC explained that they would still be a choice, even if they don't have room to add stuff for.
I think that's a question of whether there are competitive alternatives available, and
there are alternatives available. Full stop.
I think
the whole premise of picking Pawtucket, as you just said, is that should be the destination market because lots of not just because a large percentage of the oil majority is moving from Wood River Pawtucket, but because by the way you define a destination market, that's where customers are purchasing here oil and where they have choices about purchasing oil. And so I'm testing that part about they have, if they only had one choice of purchasing oil in Pawtucket, it wouldn't be a good destination market. And so they have to have choices. That's how FERC framed the analysis anyhow, depending very heavily on these choices. But if those choices are phantasms, don't actually exist, then how can, and maybe just I'm wrong about the capacity, but if I'm right about capacity, how can this possibly be a relevant destination market under FERC's own test for what it takes to be a destination market?
Your Honor, here I would refer maybe to the we have extensive citations at page 56 of our brief, and I can go through some of those. And it starts with the with the citation to witness Steck-Schulte at page 11, who talked about the highly.
Yeah, let me make sure I'm on the same page. Which JA page?
This is cited. I can tell you his testimony is at JA 511, mm-hmm. And I can tell you where this is cited in the commission orders, footnotes 42, 55, and 60.
This is the original decision?
Yes. And he talks about the highly desirable nature of the Pawtucket hub, and that there's infrastructure there for further transport. And he talks about that the significant majority of the volumes on MPLX Ozark go to Pawtucket.
So significant majority. You said there's a significant minority, but certainly the majority of oil is going on from Wood River to Pawtucket.
That's right.
I get the commission found that. Where you just mentioned a couple other things
yeah.
this witness said. Where does FERC adopt say those same things?
I would.
Just as FERC cites some witness doesn't mean that everything the witness says is not part of FERC's decision.
Yeah, I would cite the footnotes 42, 55, and 60.
I know, but where in FERC's decision itself?
That is
42 says the majority of volumes are delivered to Wood River for transport. Tucker, we said that. Okay. And then you said 46?
42, 55.
Sorry, 55?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'm just hopping here.
This is in the order, right?
Right. Yes. So 55 is on JA 779. So that's saying the same thing. So twice now we're saying that lots of stuff that goes into Wood River goes on to Pawtucket. But you were citing testimony for more things, but those things are not things that FERC said.
The significant majority of the volumes go to Pawtucket.
Right. That's all you're citing him for?
Right. For,
what's that got to do with whether there's actual real-world competition in Pawtucket on these other pipelines if they're at capacity?
I think we have actual shipper behavior, and for that I would move to the next citation to the record, which here I would cite Dr. Webb, and I'm looking at pages 49 and 51 56, and
wait,
this is
wait of the FERC decision,
of his testimony.
I want to know where FERC said this.
Okay.
I'm not being clear. The fact that a witness says it isn't enough unless FERC adopted that rationale.
Yeah.
So where did FERC say what you're about
sure.
to say?
Sure. Notes 42, 45. I don't want to go too fast here. I can read these into the...
No, but 42, I mean, again, they're citing to Webb, but where are they saying what you're saying Webb said?
I think the challenge here is that the in my notes here, it's in red ink, meaning what the citation to Webb is going to be to the sealed version of the JA. And I'm glad to provide that citation to the court.
No, but I can't.
The commission can't say some of these.
But 42 is a footnote that says, comes after the sentence, the majority of volumes on MPLX go from Wood River to Pawtucket. If that's all they're citing Webb for, then it's not helpful to you. And if they are citing it for a additional legal proposition or factual finding, they need to make that somewhere. They can do a redacted decision, but I can't, if all that footnote, all that precedes that footnote is the same point that we've made four or five times about the movement, and that they don't contest about the majority of movement of oil from Wood River onto Pawtucket. No one contests that. And as far as anyone can tell from FERC's decision itself, that's all they're citing, Schulte and Webb for. And I don't know how we can then look at all these other pages and bring them in and say FERC was adopting those things if they didn't say it.
I do want to make sure I mentioned all the footnotes in it, and I take your point. I can't change the way the order is written.
Do any of the other footnotes come with FERC making any of the substantive analysis that you're saying they're citing to?
I would say yes, Your Honor. I would push.
Tell me where FERC said it.
And the FERC is looking at the market, and FERC is saying that the behavior of the market participants indicate that the appropriate market includes Pawtucket. And I would, if I could stick with Webb for a Dr. Webb for a second. And he discusses at length what the behavior of Phillips 66 is here, and a lot of that information I can't disclose, but it's in the sealed version that the court has, and that's at JA.
But what FERC could say in his decision is, we find the behavior of what you just said here in court of Phillips Petroleum supports our determination X. Did they say that?
I point to paragraph 20 at JA 776.
Okay.
And that's where the commission says that the market should include Pawtucket because it has alternatives available. The commission was right about that. And in support,
right in the sense that the pipelines are there.
The pipelines are there,
but what if there is no capacity?
Or not enough.
Well, I would point to Dr. Webb's testimony that I referred to, and that indicates as a practical matter, the capacity is there.
How much capacity does there have to be for switchers to exert to make a price increase on profit?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but again, I would cite what the commission cited here. I would refer to what the commission cited to support that proposition, and that's at footnote 61 that cited Dr. Webb's rebuttal testimony.
Well, let me put it another way. How much throughput is there now beyond Wood River? Is that confidential?
I think the number is confidential. It's a substantial majority that goes to Pawtucket from Wood River. And what the commission was saying in paragraph 25 is that a significant portion of that is...
Is it in the record and unredacted how much capacity Capwood has? Not excess, total.
I don't have that in front of me. I think it must be in the record.
Keystone, one of the players?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is Keystone one of the players that could take oil to Pawtucket?
Yes, it is.
All right. So it looks like there's what looks like a great deal of uncommitted capacity there.
And I would refer, Your Honor.
However, if let's assume there is, what do we make of Husky's point that it's not really in play unless the price of crude there is competitive, right? That the shippers are going to look, aren't going to take advantage of a pipeline's alternative route if they're going to be selling at the other end where the price is not as high.
And again, and I would refer to the footnote 19 of the initial order, the competitive alternatives aren't contested here. There's no question that if we limit the geographic market to Wood River, the competitors are Keystone and Platt and Capwood in addition to MPLX Ozark. But if we expand it, then that Capwood falls out and Dakota Access, Southern Access, and Mustang gets included. And that's why we see the change in agent.
I'm sorry, and I won't say it out loud because it's in the sealed appendix, but just on 1096 to 1098, we have question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, and they're all at or near capacity. I mean, right, do you have your sealed appendix in front of me? Right? Line starting with line 15 on 1096 through line 7 on 1098, and they're going through these things and they're at or near capacity. Am I misreading it?
I don't.
Technical stuff, so if I'm misreading
yeah,
it,
I don't,
just seems, direct questions.
I don't think so. I think
you don't think I'm misreading it?
No, and I don't think the competitive alternatives are actually disputed here, and that's what the commission is saying in the footnote.
We're not talking about competition, but to say that we're picking Patoka as part of the market, not just because of the movement, because that's a place where customers are making choices. If they're not making choices, then how can FERC's decision stand with that?
Well, I think they are making choices. And again, that gets back to some
choices if there's no capacity on the other pipelines.
Where they're actually using it. I think the behavior of the participants here in the market,
I'm very confused. If they're at or near capacity, you're saying they're at or near capacity because everyone's already using their things, or that?
That could be. I would refer your.
We don't know, though.
I don't think that was an issue here. The issue here is that's the second step, whether the competitive alternatives are good and available. I don't think that comes into play here.
Okay. How does FERC define what the destination market, how it looks for what an end destination market?
It looks for where the shippers can ship. The commission discussed that at.
It can't be just where shippers can ship.
At paragraph 19. The destination market, this is JA 775, where the shipper may rationally look for transportation and where the shippers supply downstream needs, and where alternatives may be available if the pipeline attempts to exercise market power. And the commission explained what the analysis here.
But we can't rationally look for transportation service if everybody else is already full.
I think that's
except for this pipeline that has for their arguments about the affiliate relationships and ability to exercise market power, their arguments.
I think that's a question of whether the alternatives are available, and that's the next step. And I think what the commission is saying here is that these.
I mean, in the next page, the commission also considers whether the appropriate, this is the same paragraph on top of 776, the commission in identifying the destination market, not the competition step, step one. The commission also considers whether the appropriate geographic market definition should be expanded based on where shippers may look for alternatives in the event of a price increase. So that's part of identifying the destination market, correct? That's what FERC said.
Yes.
Okay. And so that's why I'm asking, and clearly it's in the record, testimony about capacities on other pipelines. And so one were to assume that the record were to show that all those other pipelines at Patoka are already at or near capacity, how would their existence support FERC's determination that Patoka is a place where shippers may look for alternatives in the event of a price increase? That's where I'm hung up. That's what I'm not understanding.
And again, and now I'll get back to Dr. Webb's testimony. I think he explains what, for example, what Phillips 66 could do. And I want to be careful not to use any of the information that's sealed. But this is at...
Okay, but we don't have FERC anywhere adopting that.
But they, I can show where they, where FERC cited Dr. Webb.
For a different point.
I,
that was just for the movement point from Wood River to Patoka.
I think they cited
even though the only sentence in the opinion says, before the footnote says, this is to show movement from Wood River to Patoka, a majority or most, I think they use different words, of oil moves from Wood River to Patoka, footnote, and they cite the two experts. And you're saying when they did that, they were also endorsing everything that Webb said on the cited pages.
I think
that's how we're supposed to interpret that without them having said that.
Sorry, Your Honor. I think what the conclusion here is that the behavior of the shippers demonstrates that this is one market. And they cited these pages, and I can show you the footnotes where mm-hmm. Where Dr. Webb was cited for these propositions.
One market because they're moving back and forth.
And they have alternatives. Yes, that's what Dr. Webb.
Okay, which pages?
Yeah.
For Dr. Webb.
Yeah, and here I'm referring to pages 49 and 51 to 56 at JA 1247 and 1249 to 54, 1254.
Sorry, I've had a lot of questions.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I've asked a lot of questions, and my colleagues have some as well. Do you have any questions?
No. Did you say at some point that FERC said the competitive alternative is uncontested? Am I hearing you correct? And if so, where'd they say that?
In footnote 19, the parties agree on what the competitive alternatives would be if the geographic market and JA 770, if the geographic market's confined to Wood River, the competitive alternatives would be Keystone, Platte, Capwood. And if it's expanded, the competitive alternatives here pull in Dakota Access, Southern Access, and Mustang. And Capwood would fall out because...
What's the Dakota Access? I thought that was contested. Southern Access, Mustang. Is there some finding somewhere where FERC says the parties do not contest the...
Yeah, I'm referring to footnote 19, JA 770.
Okay.
No further questions?
No.
Sam, over time, is there?
So the statement that the shipper could simply, and that's the word used, I believe, simply divert barrels to Patoka through another carrier is made without reference, again, to the availability of capacity, correct? That's at the bottom of 1249.
That may be true.
I don't understand. That's what I'm not understanding. How could there be agreement that competitive alternatives exist without the parties thinking about capacity when they made such an agreement? So I'm not sure how we're bringing together what we're talking about in the record. Have the parties agreed that there were, did FERC say the parties agreed that there were competitive alternatives available, which to me means capacity would be available? You can't have a competitive alternative they don't have the capacity, at least not in my mind. That doesn't make sense. Is there such a finding here that there's no disagreement on the point that I asked and Judge Ginsburg had just asked? In other words, was there some disagreement over capacity somewhere?
Not that I'm aware of. I think the way the commission's analysis here is to look at these markets and look at the market behavior. Right. And I can go through the colloquy I had with Judge Millett about some of that behavior of Phillips 66. And we can also talk about what Huskies, there's some testimony that we haven't gotten to that would talk about what Huskies options are in Patoka that don't go through Wood River. And that testimony, and I can cite that as well. That is the testimony of witness Chan at pages 2 and 4, JA 267 and 269.
So that's not sealed.
No.
Where did they discuss capacity?
And that's the testimony there is that all of Husky's volumes are shipped to Patoka and then to Lima. And that the testimony is that Husky could purchase oil at Patoka or secure transportation on Dakota Access, Southern Access, or Mustang, or Keystone, Platte. And then
testimony made with any reference to capacity or whether Husky had arrangements?
I don't believe so, not there.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Over time. We have the intervener. Ms. Kohlhausen, I said that correctly.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Elizabeth Kohlhausen on behalf of the intervener, MPLX Ozark Pipeline. I want to start today by going back to a discussion that Judge Ginsburg had about whether the commission had ever defined the market in this way. And I would point you to the case Enterprise Products Company. It's often referred to as Seaway 1. It's at 146 FERC 61115. And it's referenced in footnote 35 of the commission's ID, or the commission's decision. This is the case that underlied the court's decision in Mobile before this court, and I'm just reading from this decision. It was a contested market, and in that market, it said trial staff using actual operational data from the pipeline traced the crude oil that Pegasus received backwards to its injection point to identify all potential alternatives to Pegasus. That's paragraph 35 of this order. It's cited in footnote 41 of the commission's decision. So the commission has, in fact, undertaken exactly the same analysis to define the market. In this case, it undertook it previously in the Pegasus decision. And finally, I don't have much time, but I would like to discuss the fact that the issue that was presented to the commission on briefs and here regards the determination of the geographic destination market. There's been a lot of discussion about whether alternatives are good alternatives, whether they're used. There's not a lot of discussion about that in the court's decision. I mean, in the commission's decision, frankly, because it wasn't a topic that was contested, as footnote 19 shows. I understand the question about how is an alternative a good alternative if it doesn't have any capacity. That's been discussed extensively by the commission before in other cases. It wasn't discussed here, and unfortunately, I don't have the site here. The idea is that someone could buy the crude after it's shipped on one of those alternatives. So it doesn't have to...
possible that the current carriers have already provisional rights on other carriers?
Yes, that's also the case. If you look at figures 2 and 3 in our brief, the intervener's brief, and I'll give you the joint appendix site, these show the significant, it's JA 1251 for figure 3 and JA 1252 for figure 2. These are highly confidential exhibits, but one shows the movements of the petitioner itself right now in the markets, in which of the pipelines, this is figure 3, which of the pipelines it already uses. So this is evidence that regardless, I think this is why this wasn't contested, because there's actual use of these by petitioners right now, and the commission could see this, as could everyone else.
But it seems to have, what needs to be shown is that at least the majority, not all non-affiliate shippers, will have access to these other pipelines if they have to take all their oil off of MPLX / Woodpat due to hypothesized super competitive increase in prices. Not that in the past they've been doing it when Woodpat or when there's already just a filed rate in place, so then they wouldn't be looking for capacity or using capacity as a protective measure against that filed rate. Well, the question is whether it's a protection against opening MPLX up to the ability to use market rates, and then theoretically, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but theoretically, imposing super competitive prices. Is that here? And I take your point. I mean, FERC says they appear to agree. And so I'm not sure what it means when parties appear to agree to something. It seems to me they appear to agree that these are options they have right now. And I'm asking about a different world. They have capacity right now when there's no reason for them to jump off MPLX.
I guess I would respond in two ways to your question. First, the analyses that the commission conducted to support its decision that these markets were competitive, it considers these alternatives. And I think that was, although you may not see it exactly in footnote 19, everyone included the same competitive alternative in those HHI analyses. This was not an issue. You didn't have petitioners arguing there's no capacity, so this one should be excluded. It just wasn't before the commission. Also, I do think it's important that it is not that it has to be an exact, that shipper can move, but it could buy the oil in Patoka that another shipper moves down those lines. And I think it's not in the decision.
I thought petitioners here were shipping oil. They're not just purchasers.
That's correct. If you look at the statement that Mr. Chan made, he has testified on behalf of the petitioners.
Put me back to that page again, please. Sorry.
Yes, Your Honor. Just to move. It's in footnote 43. I don't have the JA right in front of me for it. Mr. Chan was asked in his testimony, what are your alternatives? They asked him. Mm-hmm. He said, buying crude oil in Patoka, mm-hmm. which demonstrates the point I was making, shipping crude oil to Patoka, mm-hmm. meaning he recognizes there's other pipelines, he listed them, or shipping to Wood River on a different pipeline than Ozark, and then shipping to Patoka.
And that question was asked, what are your options if super competitive prices imposed by MPLX / Woodpat?
I believe the exact wording was, if you don't use the applicant pipeline, what would be your alternatives? And they listed buying in Patoka, shipping in Patoka, and shipping to Wood River and over.
And that was petitioner's witness.
That's correct. And so I think, I agree. It is hard to point in here to some of these questions you're raising, but I think that's because that wasn't what was before the commission. I believe I'm over my time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wagner, we'll give you 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Wagner, yes. I'd like you to look at page JA-1254, please. The answer at line 9, part of which is confidential, goes to one of the points we've been discussing. Is that statement accurate? But one of your clients.
This is a statement by Dr. Webb. This is the pipeline's witness, his testimony on JA-1254.
Right.
Which
pipeline's witness?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is it accurate?
Is it accurate? No. Outside of the confidential material, that says thereby defeating the coordinated price increase. And that is not accurate. That's not proven. And that's what's needed to
be
proven.
Well, I'm asking about the phrase that is confidential.
Ah.
Is it accurate?
Regarding rights?
Yeah.
I believe it does have those long-term contracts, yes.
Thank you.
One thing I'd like to very quickly go back to in respondents' discussion is the citation to Dr. Webb's testimony at paragraph 25, note 61 of the commission's decision. On page 55 of FERC's brief, they expressly disavow relying on that. It states that they looked at commercial realities, not Dr. Webb's quantitative analysis. So to the extent that they're relying on that to sort of backfill missing substantial evidence, that they've expressly disavowed relying on that.
Are they missing substantial evidence? Did you raise this capacity issue? I mean, it's a very confusing record.
it's not so much the capacity issue.
Argue that there's no real choices in Pawtucket because of capacity constraints, or at least for a lot of the shippers, maybe not one, but maybe for a lot of the shippers, non-affiliate shippers, there's capacity constraints. You haven't raised that?
We raised that there are not delivered price, that the delivered prices are such that you would not shift to any option at Pawtucket.
Not because of lack of capacity, but because of the destination market price?
That's correct. So that must be tested. You have to look at the delivered price. What FERC has said is, we assume that these are currently used. Here's a map showing flows. And because these are currently used, they're assuming that the price would be such that shippers, enough shippers to move the needle, would respond to a price increase by shifting. That's the fact that's missing. If you don't show that someone would shift to another location using hard evidence, using actual delivered prices, then it doesn't do you any good to say that under some other set of conditions people use these pipelines. Is there incremental discipline? The answer is no, and there's nothing in this decision that says that there is.
Do you disagree with footnote 19 in FERC's original decision, page JA-771, about the existence of competitive alternatives?
Oh, the footnote?
19.
Kind of a nuanced answer. The ALJ required the parties to provide HHI analyses under various sets of assumptions. And if the destination market is Wood River and the capacity of X pipeline is this, what's the HHI and what results? And there's a table in the joint appendix showing that. We're not contesting that if the destination market includes Pawtucket, those are the pipelines that go to Pawtucket.
That you have alternatives there.
It's difficult to agree with that. We would not shift at all to Pawtucket. So
I don't know what you mean.
No alternative at Patoka is competitively priced such that we would shift and actually discipline the market, discipline the Ozark pipeline. So that means that no alternative at Patoka, nothing should be looked at. FERC makes based on price. And FERC makes a really significant error in that regard in all of its, you know, going back to that Seaway decision where they say all used alternatives are necessarily competitive. That's, again, that's the cellophane fallacy. And they've sort of forced the debate into what's the market then. If we're going to assume that everybody in a market is competitive, that puts the debate there.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.